Sturgeon Sport Rules Update, Briefing and Public Hearing. Laura and Bill, good afternoon. Now, Laura and Bill, we're okay, but we're just a little bit behind schedule. We have to go upstairs here in a little while, so if you don't need quite an hour, trim it down a little bit, and we'd appreciate that.
Good afternoon, Chair Carpenter and Commissioners. I'm Bill Twight, Special Assistant and Program Manager lead in the Fish Program.
Today we're here to talk about our proposed urban sport fishing regulation updates. These will include updating the Columbia River Sturgeon spawning sanctuaries upstream of Quantico Dam, addressing retention fisheries upstream of the Canary Dam, addressing night fishing in the Chinalis River, improving clarity on sturgeon catch and release regulations, defining oversized sturgeon within the WAC, and simplifying and clarifying sturgeon or statewide sturgeon regulations. Thank you. This is all going to be found in WAC 220-316-010, which you should have a copy of the original and the revised version in front of you. So as managers, our long-term vision with this, with all of these populations are to consider the conservation of the population. And the rules that you'll see in front of you today really aim at some of these key long-term vision options, which are to improve the abundance of the spawning adult sturgeon throughout their range, to enhance future fishing opportunity, and to ensure the long-term viability of the population. Worldwide sturgeon are in decline, and we have a pretty good opportunity here to get ahead of the curve and take action to help protect these species before some of the threats that are currently facing them cause further damage to the population. So in the Columbia, these sturgeon are facing issues from changes to their environment, changes to the ecosystem, including sea lion predator behavioral changes, new and non-native species, and impacts from climate change, are just a few to name.
Hold the mic just a little closer.
Sure. So we do in Washington have this policy guidance addressing sturgeon conservation in the lower Columbia River. Upstream of Bonneville Dam, there is no such policy guidance or guiding documents, but we do think that this is a good policy to lean on when we're considering conservation and management objectives upstream as well. And so the newest version of this policy was adopted January 25th of this year with the objective to provide consistent management guidelines that promote a healthy population and provide sustainable fisheries. I highlighted here a few key conservation and fishery management objectives, which are to increase the abundance of the spawning population, to manage with a precautionary approach, to monitor the population within our available resources, and to quantify impacts of fisheries on sturgeon abundance, to consider the projected recruitment and sources of mortality in those fisheries, and then to monitor and manage those fisheries. And then for a little background, so we're all on the same page with sturgeon. They are a bit different than salmon and some other species, so I thought I'd quickly touch on their life cycle. Sturgeon spend a good amount of their time as juveniles and subadults just out foraging and exploring along the Washington coast. Historically, all of the white sturgeon in Washington would have been considered one large population, but now those populations are fragmented by dams, and so we're managing them as all separate fragmented populations. Around 25 years of age-ish is when sturgeon will mature. Females, you know, can have about 500,000 to a million eggs their first year and will continue to produce more and more eggs as they grow throughout their life. It is the oldest and longest lived sturgeon that are contributing the most eggs back during every spawning event. And these eggs take about 2 weeks or so to hatch, and they hatch as these little endogenous yolk larvae, which spend another few weeks before they begin feeding. Around this time of year, actually, we just completed our young of year surveys upstream. We start catching our sturgeon just about the size of the palm of your hand. So those are our young of year sturgeon, and that's our recruitment index to evaluate recruitment success for that year. That life period of a mature spawning fish, pre-spawn, during spawn, and just post-spawn is a very critical period, which they're more susceptible to changes in the environmental conditions, as well as all of the eggs and larvae up through their first young year of life. They're still very susceptible to environmental changes. So the whole purpose of our spawning sanctuaries that we currently have in place is to protect primarily those adult female sturgeon. And so I'm going to give a quick overview on what those sanctuaries currently look like. In the Lower Columbia below Bonneville, our first sanctuary was adopted in 1996. It was updated in 2010, and it covers about 9 miles of the Lower Columbia from May 1st through August 31st. Oregon in 2010 matched that with a sanctuary in the Willamette River below Willamette Falls. Again, this is also closed May 1st through August 31st. These sanctuaries were not changing, but we are adopting proposing some rules for upstream of Bonneville Dam. And in these areas, all of the sanctuaries upstream of Bonneville currently cover May 1st through July 31st. And then I'll show you here, too. I have the river mileage. These are all much shorter sanctuaries, mostly because in a reservoir habitat, we assumed that these spawning sturgeon weren't using as much of the habitat for spawning compared to in the lower river where we have free-flowing river habitat. And then we also have sanctuaries upstream of McNary in the Hanford Reach below Priest Rapids Dam, and in the Lower Snake below Ice Harbor Dam, we have sanctuaries, again, going May 1st to July 31st. As I mentioned earlier, we use our Young of Year surveys to evaluate the recruitment success in each of our pools upstream and in the Lower River. To orient you to this figure, we have our years. There it is. So our years along this line going from 1997 to 2018. And like I said, we just completed our 2019 surveys. And at the top, we have Bonneville Pool in the first column, the Dalles Pool, John Day Pool, and then McNary Pool. And the color coding here is our EP value, or our recruitment index value. So a score of 0, which I've highlighted in red, would mean that there is no measurable recruitment. That is different than no recruitment. There may be some fish, but they're so low density that we can't detect them with our sampling gear. And then the green values, or our higher values here, would indicate higher densities of fish, indicating better recruitment success. And so a few things to point out here. You can see as you move upstream, so from Bonneville up to McNary, you see an increase in the amount of red on the screen, so much less recruitment success as you go upstream. In McNary Pool, we only had funding to survey from 1999 to 2011, and that's the last year we have any recruitment survey data or stock assessment data for McNary Reservoir. And in John Day, you can see we have 6 years of zeros recently, and this year, at least from the Washington's crew, I haven't heard from Oregon's crew, but there were no Young of Year caught this year either, so that's 7 years in a row of no measurable recruitment found in John Day Reservoir. Additionally, a problem that we see more prevalent upstream than downstream are the number of sturgeon mortalities that are occurring. These generally are associated with extreme environmental conditions that occur around July and August when we see our peak temperatures in the Columbia River, and they disproportionately affect the oversized sturgeon. So if you recall, in 2015, we had that big sturgeon die-off, which we think is largely connected to the sockeye die-off. 98% of those fish were over 55 inches in fork length. And we still regularly get reports of oversized sturgeon mortalities in the river. We try to go out and identify these when we can, when we have staff in the area. But they're generally oversized fish, and usually they're too far gone to actually evaluate the cause of death. So we think that it's likely related to the spawning period and environmental conditions associated. And as managers, we don't really have the ability to change the climate, but we can consider what we can do as people to try and minimize the stress at that time of year, which has led to our proposal for the spawning sanctuaries. So our proposal is that in all of the sanctuaries, we would extend the time of the sanctuary through August 31st to get through that peak extreme period. This would be a full closed period from May 1st through August 31st and would align with the sanctuary rules below Bonneville Dam, with the goal of minimizing handling stress in oversized sturgeon during a post-spawn period. And we are actually in joint state water seeking concurrency with Oregon now on this. Their commission just passed these rules as of October 11th. And then in John Day Reservoir, below McNary Dam, and in the Hanford Reach below Priest Rapids Dam, we also have a proposal to extend the area of the spawning sanctuary. So I'll go into some figures here to explain what that might look like. So here, this is John Day Reservoir. And to orient you, over on the right side of the screen is McNary Dam. The current boundary for the sanctuary is a mile and a half downstream at the Highway 395 bridge here. The proposed alternative brings that sanctuary down another 11 miles to Irrigan Hatchery. This location was determined using some telemetry data, which I'll talk about briefly, but to look at what this looks like a little closer, we're recommending a sign on the Oregon shore at the Irrigan Hatchery outlet, with that line drawn straight across to the Washington shore, where we'll also place a sign on that shoreline.
Now, the first, so the name Irrigan Hatchery Sanctuary sort of implies Oregon side. Do these sanctuaries, what, cross the entire river, or?
So it's not necessarily the Irrigan Hatchery Sanctuary. It's just that Irrigan Hatchery was like the best landmark in that area to identify for the area. So it would be the sanctuary below McNary Dam, the McNary Dam tail race.
And yes, all of these sanctuaries are designed to cover both the Oregon and Washington waters. Okay. Again, this is, we have to do concurrent management.
Yeah. And then my second question is not related specific. Well, in earlier in the presentation about sanctuaries said they're selected. It sort of assumed that spawning is taking place, especially in these reservoirs where it's sort of unnatural. And then we do these test fisheries to see recruitment, and we're getting a lot of zeros. Could it be a sampling problem? Do we have any basis for understanding where spawning is occurring?
So thank you for that question. So my next slide here was going to get into some of the telemetry work that we did to try and evaluate where spawning might be occurring. Okay. And the other thing is that we do think that our recruitment surveys are accurate, because we later go back through and do stock assessment, which targets a little bit larger size fish, and we don't see these fish recruit to the stock assessment gear. So if they were there and we just weren't catching them, we would assume that they would be detected in the stock assessment gear later. So we're not seeing them there. So the telemetry study that we have for this area, and I wish we could do these kinds of telemetry studies everywhere, because it would really, you know, give us the data we need to evaluate where spawning is really occurring and what kind of habitat these fish are using. But Oregon received a 2-year grant to evaluate spawning sturgeon locations within this area, particularly because we were having these recruitment issues. So in 2018, they tagged 15 ripe males, 10 ripe females, and 1 mature female, and they tracked them throughout the year. And I don't have all the maps on here, but I can share them with you if you would like. But they actually utilized a much larger area than what was at original sanctuary. And so we took from that telemetry data and created these estimates of what proportion of those fish would we be protecting if we used the proposed sanctuary guidelines. So the current sanctuary protected about 92% male and 78% percent of the females that were tagged. And keep in mind, this is kind of a small sample size, but all of these fish were consistently occupying these areas to get to these estimates, or to make us feel confident that this is representative of the population. expanding that just in time. So keeping the same area up at the Highway 395 bridge and just expanding through August actually decreases your protection for males because they're dropping below the bridge in that time and only marginally increases that protection for females. Expanding in just location and not time, so expanding down to the Oregon Hatchery, but keeping it just through July 31st, actually increases protections for males up to 99.7% of the males that were tagged would have been protected then, and 82.6% of females. And then expanding both in area and in time gives us 99.7% protection of the males and 86.8% of the females. So it's not perfect, but it is vastly improved from what we are currently covering with our sanctuary in that area. So I'm going to go on to the next reach unless there's any questions with that data. Okay.
One other. So we haven't been able to do the McNary sampling for a while. My understanding is that's a population, since we do look at the populations, how they've been geographically separated, that appears to be in real trouble. Is there a way that we could resume? Where does the sampling funding come from? Is it grant funding? Is there a way that we could resume that sampling and get a better understanding of what's going on with recruitment in a population?
Yeah, so it's my understanding that in the past that funding came from BPA, which is where all of our funding upstream of Bonneville comes from for sturgeon management, and that as BPA has made cuts through time, it became a option of how frequently do we want to be in these other areas, and what amount of funding is available, and McNary was one that got dropped, and that's, I wasn't there at that time as part of that decision, so I'm not sure exactly what went into that discussion, but it was previously funded by BPA, and there were other partners such as USGS and I believe Fish and Wildlife Service that were also funded, and a lot of that money has fallen out of that contract since then. So I don't suspect that there is much of an opportunity in the near future to increase that funding through BPA, but I can't say for sure. So in McNary, though, in the Hanford Reach,
going back to the Young of the Year surveys, just 2001, there were zeros across the board. And then was there some incident there? And then, but I guess also, is a one, would the one be the ultimate highest value here?
Yes.
You know, full recruitment. Is that, would that be the target, or is there somewhere beneath that puts us in a healthy situation?
So that's a great question. I think so. 2001 and in 2015 also, if you'll notice, there were zeros across the board. I think we're looking at some years with really poor environmental conditions. I at least can reflect back on 2015 and remember that was a significant drought year. And so I think that when you are experiencing really high temperatures and low flows and you're a sturgeon, you will tend to resorb your eggs and not spawn in that year. 2015 in particular, also, we had the sockeye die-off, and so the combination of those poor factors led to a large die-off in McNary and in John Day. I don't recall 2001 to speak to what the weather conditions were in the Columbia River, but it was likely also poor environmental conditions.
It was.
Here you go. And then I could also point out here, so 2006 is when that sanctuary was first placed in John Day, and we see a number of years of increased recruitment right after 2006. And then in that same area, we have a very big catch and release oversized sturgeon fishery that took place. So now I would, without knowing more information, I would say that probably some of that is handling fish, oversized fish in that area became more popular. And so the sanctuary started to lose its effect once people figured out how to target them below that area. And then, I'm sorry, what was your next question?
The metric
ideal.
The numbers, what is?
So I don't know that we have an ideal number worked out, just that, yeah, one would be perfect full gear saturation, and the higher the better generally. But this is just a measure, and it doesn't necessarily say that if we had a perfect year that that would be a perfect year class, because then we go back through with our stock assessment and see how they survive from a little young of year fish to our stock assessment gear a couple years down the road. But it does give us a measure of what recruitment success may have occurred that year and give us an idea of what we could be facing in the future.
As a minimum, we do look for periodic episodes of green, particularly across several years. These are long-lived species, like some groundfish species, and so they can, the population can be viable and sustaining as long as there's sufficiently frequent episodes of good environmental conditions with good associated reproduction. What makes us nervous is when we're seeing a long series of essentially zeros, or when we're seeing a year that was we expected to be a good year for reproduction, which are typically colder water, higher flow years, and we don't see a commensurate signal.
So I'll move on to the Hanford Reach Sanctuary expansion proposal. And so, again, I really wish we did have telemetry data in all of these areas because you can see how valuable that is. But here we do not, and we haven't had any survey data in McNairy since 2011. What I do have in terms of where spawning may be occurring come from these USGS surveys of egg and larval collections in 1994 and 1995. And what's interesting and unique about the Hanford Reach is that it is a very long stretch of free-flowing river habitat that doesn't occur in many other places in the Upper Columbia. So a lot of this habitat, to me, screams sturgeon spawning habitat, but I don't have a lot of data there to look at specific spawning locations. So, yeah, all these points on the graph here are locations where eggs or larvae were collected by USGS in those years. We use the information from this to evaluate potential locations for expanding the sanctuary there, because based on that previous data we have from our young of year surveys, they weren't having great recruitment success. And based on our last stock assessment survey in 2011, the population there is about a third of what's in John Day. So again, we don't know. And so that's the cautious aspect that we're trying to take here. So the current boundary is 2.5 miles downstream of Priest Rapids Dam. And originally, we thought about a couple different options throughout this reach, but we decided to move forward with the Vernita Bridge option because a majority of the eggs and larvae that were captured upstream of Vernita Bridge, which still expands the sanctuary quite a bit without taking away from other excellent fishing habitat without better data to evaluate that area. Vernita Bridge in particular is a very easy to identify location for anglers as it's a bridge crossing straight across the river. And then some of the eggs and larvae, it's my understanding, were caught directly in front of Vernita Bridge. So I think there's reasonable evidence to say that sturgeon spawning is occurring within that general vicinity. And I didn't really orient you to the graph at all on the last page. So if you have any questions about that data, I can do that. So that's all of our sanctuary rule changes here. And to recap, we are proposing to extend the time of the spawning sanctuary through August 31st in all sanctuaries. So the full close period would be May 1st through August 31st. This would align with the sanctuary rules below Bonneville Dam with the goal of minimizing handling stress and oversized sturgeon during the spawning and post-spawning period. And again, in the Joint State Waters area, we are now looking for concurrency. And
the only area that's not Joint State Waters of what Laura has described is the Hanford Reach. All the others are Joint Waters.
And then in John Day Reservoir and in the Hanford Reach, we are looking to extend the area of the spawning sanctuary further downstream with the goal of improving the overall protection of the adult spawning in that area. So I'm going to move on to some of the other rule updates here. The next option or the next item is the proposed changes to retention fisheries upstream of McNairy Dam. And I've already touched on quite a bit of the things that are happening up in McNairy, so I didn't put a bunch of background slides but feel free to ask questions. So the current regulations are white sturgeon retention allowed February 1st through July 31st in the Columbia River and tributaries from McNary Dam upstream to Priest Rapids Dam and the Snake River from the mouth to Ice Harbor. So that would be excluding the sanctuary areas and periods. So that's about 6 months of the year it is open for fishing. And we're proposing to move this area to catch and release based on the lack of monitoring data available to evaluate whether we're managing within sustainable guidelines, because we can't even set sustainable guidelines. So this is our precautionary approach, and it's consistent with the Lower Columbia's policy guidelines there. In the Chehalis River, the current language is that it's for statewide, is that it's unlawful to fish for or possess sturgeon from freshwater except the Chehalis River from 1 hour after official sunset to 1 hour before official sunset or before official sunrise. So we are proposing here to move to a statewide night closure for white sturgeon fishing with the goal of improving monitoring and protection for the overall population to meet the conservation objectives outlined in the commission policy. Increasing survival of immature fish to the broodstock size, and just simplifying statewide rules for sturgeon fishing. So it's my understanding that this rule was put in place in the 80s when retention fisheries were really large in the area, and now in this area we have no retention available. It's only open for catch and release. So for simplification purposes, we do recommend this change. And then the policy guidance for outside of the Columbia is that consideration of fisheries outside the Lower Columbia River must take into account the ability to monitor and manage those fisheries and be consistent with the Lower Columbia River sturgeon conservation objectives. And so again, our program does not have any funding to monitor fisheries outside of the Columbia. For catch and release, the current language is that it's unlawful to fail to release undersized or oversized sturgeon immediately. Again, this was language drafted when there were retention fisheries in a lot of places, and we had a slot limit in effect, which we no longer have a retention fishery in many places, so it's unclear what an undersized or oversized sturgeon is. So to clarify, we'd like to propose that any sturgeon that cannot lawfully be retained must be released immediately. Just goal here to clarify what fish should be released in all areas. And then to define oversized sturgeon, we propose that it's unlawful to totally or partially remove oversized sturgeon from the water, and that oversized sturgeon are defined as any sturgeon larger than 55 inches fork length. This was not previously defined in the WAC, but it is defined in RCW. There is a definition for take of illegal-sized sturgeon with a $2,000 fine for anything over 55 inches. So, yes.
Yeah, the question I have with regard to the 55-inch and it's unlawful to totally or partially remove an oversized sturgeon. So 55-inch, there's slot fishery, correct? And you could retain a fish, like, is it like 38 inches to 40? 55.
So it varies depending on the area that you're fishing. In the Lower Columbia right now, I think it's 44 to 50 inches.
So I guess what I was wondering is how you actually can tell that it's 55 and not 54 and 3/4 unless you get it. I mean, how do you run a tape on a fish and determine that it's a legal fish if you can't get it straight? You know,
but get it out of the water.
It's in a net.
So, first I would say that that's more of an enforcement issue. But the other thing is that at least in the lower Columbia, and I believe in all the other areas, we haven't opened or we're not opening a fishery right up to that 55 inch mark. So, for example, in the Lower Columbia, the top end is at 50 inches, so there should be a 5-inch variation there that you could pull the fish out, measure it, and put it back. So there was a difference there in our catch and release.
And so what we're really trying to do is just discourage, if it looks like it's over 50, just leave it in. Yeah.
It would be difficult.
Yeah, and we're not. We're giving people enough of a buffer that if it's a little over 50, you're fine. Bring it on board to measure before you release. It's just the obviously, if it's 5 inches longer than the maximum, there's no way you should be bringing that fish on board.
And so, sorry, I was just going to clarify if I can.
Go ahead.
So the we did try to keep it slightly separate in our regulations here for the cannot be lawfully retained, must be released immediately, versus if it's over 55, don't take it out of the water. That way, if you need to bring it on board, measure it, and put it back, it still could be considered released immediately without having that issue of I can't take it out of the water, but I need to measure it type of deal.
Yeah, that kind of gets to my question. I was wondering why, since very often this is a catch-and-release fishery, why we allow pulling any size fish out of the water. But I guess if it's CNR, it's covered by that must be released immediately.
Right.
I was just wondering if we shouldn't be really clear that if it's a fish that can't be retained, period, it shouldn't be pulled out of the water.
How are you going to take a picture?
Well, that's, they're not like salmon. I mean, they're big. They're pretty tough.
And so this is where I tried to cover a little bit in that life cycle piece earlier. So when you're dealing with a mature spawning fish, it is very critical to not handle that fish too much. And that's where that 55-inch length comes from, is anything that is likely reaching maturity. Chair Carpenter is correct. Like a younger fish is a little more hardy because they're not at that critical spawning period yet. I still would like to see them released immediately, but they will survive a minute or so of being measured in a quick picture. But what we're trying to eliminate is people dragging fish up on shore and laying down next to them and taking those pictures, or hauling large oversized fish over the sides of their boats. And that can be very damaging to the fish, and very large fish too, just their own body weight out of the water can negatively impact their survival. So I think that the goal here was to protect that critical broodstock size fish and to provide maybe a little bit of leniency for fish closer to the slot limit for measuring purposes and things like that.
Chairman, most of my questions came up here earlier, but I guess I would note, as you have indicated, that sturgeon are incredibly tough fish. I mean, you have a delicate fish on one hand over here. Sturgeon have got to be on the extreme, can live out of water for quite a while. Having said that, I don't disagree with the staff objective here of trying to discourage a bunch of cinematography events on obviously big fish. I wondered, though, about the 5 inches. I just started to measure 5 inches, and I'm trying to recall when sturgeon get to sexual maturity, and it used to be 60 inches or 72, 6 feet was the time. You know, it gets me to ask the question, why 5 inches and not 10 when you judge the physiology of the creature and then their sexual maturity or protecting broodstock?
Thank you. The size of the fish does not determine their maturity. We generally would consider that most fish by 6 foot are likely mature, but they can reach maturity smaller. I've actually sampled a 3 foot female full of ripe eggs. So it can happen, although it's much rarer at those smaller sizes. 55 inches, the reason we went with that particular length is because it's already in RCW that possession of a fish over 55 inches is illegal. And we thought that this would match and clarify for both anglers, managers, and enforcement that there is an issue with keeping anything over 55 and that it's already in RCW. So that would have to, I guess, go up to the state legislature for change if we need to adjust that length.
So the size limit for retaining fish is 50. So possession of any fish over 50 inches would be a violation. You're saying there's a statutory additional rule that is, a, you know, it's not relevant to our current management. It was picked at some point in time ago for some other reason, I presume. But so I guess I understand the statutory thing. What was that law all about?
I don't know. I wasn't the person who plays that role. But I do think it was a goal of protecting oversized sturgeon. I believe it was my predecessor who worked on that. And I don't have any of the documents to really read into the discussion on that exact size length or why that was chosen. So I can look into it, though, and see if I can find anything for you. Okay, so we're on the last update, so sorry that this is going long. So finally, the overall thing was just simplification of the rule to align that with other state rule simplification standards. So there's directionality. Now all of the rules read in the upstream direction. There are section breaks that align with the GIS layers associated with the Fish Washington app so that if an angler is comparing what's in their app, they should be able to find that exact same rule in the WAC. So it should be much clearer and easier to understand. So, and just overall improving the organization. I think it's my understanding that when this WAC was put together, it was actually a culmination of several different WACs that all got pushed into a single document. So we tried to reorganize that a little bit for clarity. So to recap everything, we are proposing to expand the Columbia River Sturgeon spawning sanctuaries, with all of them being closed through August 31st. Expanding the area of the sanctuaries below McNary Dam and below Priest Rapids Dam to close retention fisheries upstream of McNary Dam and shift that to catch and release only, to close night fishing on the Chehalis River, to improve clarity on sturgeon catch and release regulations, to define oversized sturgeon as those greater than 55 inches fork lengths, and to simplify and clarify statewide sturgeon regulations all into a single clarified WAC. We did go to 4 public meetings with these proposed rule changes. In the Dalles, Oregon, Kennewick, Washington, and Hermiston, Oregon, we were with Oregon staff and proposed these jointly. And then our final meeting was in Montesano. So in the Dalles, we had 11 members of the public attend. There were no specific recommendations from the public, and they did appear to understand the rules as they were proposed. With no specific objections raised at that meeting. In Kennewick, we had 26 people attend with a very different story there. There was a lot of frustration over the lack of recent data in McNary Pool. And I'll say this is a very passionate group with us, and they had a lot of support for establishing a volunteer program with anglers and guides to help the department gather the necessary data. I've had some of these guys calling me and emailing me. They are very passionate about setting up some sort of voluntary program here. There was concern with the impact of the tribal gillnet fisheries in John Day Pool and the population there. There was concern about the loss of the oversized sturgeon catch and release fishing opportunity below McNary Dam. There was also a unique recommendation there for electronic catch report cards to improve the catch monitoring within that area where we're not creeling. In Hermiston, we had 11 participants, and a lot of their comments mirrored that in Kennewick. There was concern also that anglers were being punished for some of the environmental conditions that they don't have control over. And there was concern with the impact of tribal gillnet fisheries and, again, concern over the broodstock collection efforts for hatchery supplementation upstream. And then there were recommendations to begin a hatchery program in John Day. And then in Montesano, we had 7 participants. All of them were not in favor of closing the night fishery and considered it lost fishing opportunity. There was one gentleman who recommended listing white sturgeon as endangered to help improve managing the fishery. And a lot of concern there for with impact of tribal nets fishing in the Chehalis as well. And we did receive a petition with 129 signatures opposing closing night fishing on the Chehalis. So those will be included along with all of the comments at the decision briefing. We, sorry.
Hermiston comment about concern about the broodstock collection, is that that it might be impacting these downstream populations?
So currently we have there's a program with the PUDs in I think it's Grantland PUDs to collect broodstock for stocking or hatchery supplementation upstream, and they collect those broodstock from McNary Dam tail race early in the season to try and avoid the prime spawning period. So there was concern that that collection effort was impacting the recruitment success in the pool, and that they weren't getting fish back out of that hatchery effort as well.
And if I could just add one comment, you know, volunteer programs do take effort, but I would really encourage you to take a look at the offer and see if something can be developed, because I too am concerned about the loss of monitoring and anything that can be done to amplify our human resources might be worth the effort.
I appreciate that, and I have been talking to a few different people in the agency who have implemented successful volunteer programs in other ways to see if there's something that we can do in that area to take advantage of these passionate anglers. So I'll just cover here too some of our submitted comments. So there was a online comment period open through yesterday. I just summarized what was submitted through October 1st because the deadlines to get this presentation put together. Of the 26 comments I reviewed, 8 of them did not seem relevant to the proposed rules in this package, and 18 of them were relevant. And you'll see that these numbers don't add up to 18 because some people commented on multiple items. 10 of the comments pertain to retention in McNary. All of those comments were against the proposed rules, with a lot of frustration expressed over the lack of data and recent monitoring and requesting additional monitoring to prove that fish were available. So I heard this again, that these anglers are catching fish, they believe the fish are there, and they just would like to see the monitoring to prove that they're there and that they should be able to catch. There was also more interest expressed through the online comments in citizen science or voluntary monitoring programs there. 7 comments pertain to the Chehalis River night fishing. 6 of them were against it. Most expressed frustration over the loss of the fishing opportunity and the need for additional retention in that area. 1 comment was for it and believed that we should cut back on all of our seasons to improve the populations. 2 of the comments pertain to sanctuary rules. 1 was against. And from what I could understand in the comment, they seemed to not believe the low recruitment numbers in John Day, and there was concern over the hatchery broodstock program. And 1 of the comments was for the sanctuary rules and supported fishing during a period that was less stressful to fish health. And then finally, there was 1 general comment received that supported all of the proposed rules with the request for additional days of retention in the Lower Columbia River. So that's everything I have for you today. The next steps, currently I think I'm scheduled to be on the December commission for another briefing with a decision. And please let me know if you have any additional questions.
And again, a reminder that the Oregon Commission has already looked at and chosen to formally adopt. So they have sort of a jump on you.
Okay, starting on the left,
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think I'll start with saying that I think Oregon's consideration and Mr. Twight's comments on concurrency are very serious ones to take into consideration in December. My question has to do with the amount of public comment about the area upstream of McNary Dam. So this would not be in concurrent waters. This would be in Washington waters. And that there seemed to be a lot of folks saying, this isn't right that we're not going to be able to catch any fish. So on slide 20 is where this came up, and you mentioned that there wasn't monitoring information. I wasn't sure if you meant there wasn't juvenile young of the year monitoring information, or if you meant there was no creel census, that there was no idea for how many fish were being taken. The slide indicates it's been open from February 1 to July 31st for some period of time. So are you saying it was catch monitoring? We don't have any idea if the catch was stable or the catch was declining or the catch was increasing? Or are they talking about young of the year juvenile?
Catch report cards are the only monitoring that we have in this area for sturgeon. We don't have stock assessment data since 2011. We don't have young of year surveys since 2011. And we do not have any funding to creel. We did receive a small bit of money last year to try and creel this area, which funded two creel surveyors for several months. And I think that they only encountered one sturgeon retained in that period. It turns out that it's a very large area that's difficult to creel, and it requires a significant effort to creel it well.
So when you look at the catch cards, though, does it show a stable fishery through the years or a declining catch or increasing?
So I looked at some of the catch report cards going back, and the catch did fluctuate through time, but generally it was around 100 to 400 sturgeon caught per year estimated on, through catch report cards.
With a trend one way or the other?
It seemed like it would fluctuate. And I would say that it's likely related to environmental conditions. When you're fishing in some of those areas, a low flow year concentrates the fish and makes them actually more susceptible to capture. So I don't know that from that catch report card data we can really evaluate the population as a whole. For comparison, though, some of the last stock assessment we did in McNary had an estimate of 7,881 sturgeon, and we're fishing between 100 and 400 fish a year. In John Day in 2016, we estimated 23,000 fish, and based on the information we had, we set a sustainable harvest rate at 105 fish on the quota. So I can't say that we're managing within a sustainable quota in McNary because we don't have enough information to say what a sustainable quota would be. And we're not monitoring it to cut it off when we reach any quota like we are in Bonneville, the Dalles, and in John Day pools.
Okay. Mr. Anderson?
I think I may know the answer because of the way you covered the entire presentation. This includes all the, this would not include, are there sturgeon fisheries outside the ones that were talked about in the presentation? Is there sturgeon fishery in the Skagit or the mouth of the Skagit or the Stillaguamish or any other place?
So the coastal populations in Puget Sound are all considered part of the Lower Columbia River population, and those populations were all closed to retention in 2014, I believe. So 2014, 15, and 16, there was no retention of any sturgeon in the Lower Columbia, and then we reopened sturgeon retention on a much reduced scale in 2017, and that's been narrowed down to just the Lower Columbia River. So none of the coastal areas or in Puget Sound has reopened to retention. And we've reduced the harvest rate from, I think it was like 12 or 13% prior to the closure, down to about 3.8%, so a much smaller overall quota. Then we do also have fisheries in Bonneville, the Dalles, and John Day pools, and in McNary, as we've covered. Ice Harbor and upstream in the Snake River has been closed to retention and is catch and release only due to the very low population abundance there and low productivity in the system. And then upstream of Priest Rapids and into Wanapum pools, there have been limited opportunity based on hatchery supplementation work only. And then into Lake Roosevelt, there's been a fishery recently opened, and that one is specifically based on hatchery fish as well.
Mine is just a comment. Laura, I just want to say how much I have appreciated your real thought that seems to go into a highly popular but fishery that we have great conservation concerns about, and how you've really tried to nuance your approach to the rules. And I've just been quite impressed with the work that you've done since you've come on board in this position. So thank you. It's a tough one.
I think we all agree with that.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there anything else for anyone? Laura, Bill, again, good work. Thank you. Nice to see you. Oh, and have a good weekend.